tradition speaker. And Susie, we're going to unmute you, and please tell me how you would like your time.
I'll time myself, but I'll take a 5-minute warning anyway.
5 minute. Okay, great. Thank you very much. This is Susie H.
I'm Susie. I'm a compulsive overeater. And thanks for asking me to be here. And thanks, Rena, for a great lead. That was so cool. I loved hearing what you had to say. I've got all kinds of Chicago connections too, but that's not where I live now. I live in Richmond, Virginia. Just to qualify a little bit, I first came to OA in 1979 in Philadelphia. I'd had a whole, you know, the whole same childhood, just overweight, obese father who ended up with all kinds of the health consequences of being overweight. He got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes when he was 45. He ended up having a leg bypass, a quintuple heart bypass. Didn't actually kill him, but it messed up his life a lot before he eventually died of lung cancer. And I just knew that that's where I was going. I was just, I loved food. I loved more food, extra food. I was a sneaky kid, a liar. I was a goody-goody kind of kid, and nobody can be as good as what I was trying to put out there. So a lot of lying and sneaking had to come in order to make me look better than I actually was. So yeah, dieting, all the stuff. I had gallbladder trouble when I was 16 and had to go on a zero fat diet until I could get surgery for that. And that was the only time my mom ever seemed to think that I looked right. And so yeah, all kinds of diets as a young adult. And then I was 27 when I found OA in Philadelphia, just as another diet club in my mind. And I went in and I did get a sponsor, did not like hearing about God at all. Hung around for about 4 months, lost 20 pounds and left. My highest weight ever came after that. It was 205 the first time that I was pregnant. And that's not because I gained 50 pounds in pregnancy. I gained 10 pounds. I started at 195. And second pregnancy started at 185 and also gained 10 pounds, made it only to 195 that time. So those were my top weights. I left OA for 10 years, didn't come back, tried all kinds of other, you know, every diet, everything, gym, what have you. And when I came back in 1989, I was really, really beaten, really, really demoralized, really, really unhappy. And that's a great way to come in because it made me willing to do anything that anybody had to suggest to me. Got a sponsor right away, started working steps, was so glad that there was something more here than a diet because it was clear to me that, you know, diet wasn't going to be enough. And what happened was really 17 years in program of on and off relapse. There was always some progress being made. I always had a sponsor. I always worked steps, but you know, just the simple thing of learning to not be a liar was just so hard for me. If the news was not good, I did not want to tell the news. And that's when it came to food as well as everything else. So it wasn't until 2006 that I got abstinent to stick. Finally, I think just enough stuff had gotten put together. I got abstinent while my mother was dying. I was flying back and forth to Chicago and I got a message inside of my head that said, take beautiful care of yourself. And I was like, me now? No, it's her. I can't take beautiful care of yourself. So all this time that I was flying back and forth to Chicago, I would take a walk to Whole Foods every day, buy the food that I needed, make my own dinner, regardless of what other people around me were doing, made it out to meetings, whether it was borrowing a car or walking, made my phone calls. You know, it was a miracle. And I've had plenty of outside help too, but yeah, I've been abstinent from then till now, thank God. And the only really smart thing I ever did was never leave the program. I always kept coming back because I couldn't think of anything else to do. It's not that I never wanted to leave. Plenty of times I've wanted to leave, but I couldn't think of anything else to do. So I made some notes so I don't forget stuff. So Tradition 6 is an OA group that never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. The spiritual principle is solidarity. And, you know, Rena got it all clear for us about Tradition 5. In the book, it says Tradition 5 defines our primary purpose. So our primary purpose is to carry the message of recovery to the compulsive eater who still suffers. It's our primary purpose. It's our only primary purpose. And then the book, quoting from the book, OA 12 and 12, Tradition 6 cautions each OA group to stick to the primary purpose exclusively. So they clearly want to emphasize this point. We have a primary purpose. We got to stick to it. We got to avoid distractions. What are some of the distractions? We might be tempted to endorse something. We might be tempted to finance something. We might be tempted to lend our name to something. And what are the somethings? The somethings could be a related facility or an outside enterprise. So years ago, I had a sponsor who suggested I consider what it would be like if we didn't have a given tradition. And with this one, I would say, like, pretend the Weight Watchers wanted us to develop a frozen meal and put an OA stamp of approval on it. So what would happen? We'd hire a dietitian to make sure the ingredients were right. We'd inspect the manufacturing plant. We'd okay the appearance of the logo recommended by OA. You know, it's going to cost time and money to find experts and hire them and monitor their work. It's not hard to imagine how crazy making this would be. We're totally distracted from the primary purpose of carrying the message. So in the OA 12 and 12, just reading through the tradition, there's examples like people using meeting lists to drum up business or to solicit money for a charity. There's people promoting treatment centers or churches or books. The idea in the tradition, though, is to keep it simple. No opinion on these things. No opinion on these organizations or products. We have to focus on sharing the message of recovery. We just can't afford the time and energy for this stuff. When I came back in 1989 to OA, the literature tables had lots of outside literature on them. It was just a common thing. We didn't have a lot of OA books at that time. We had the Brown Book and we had For Today when I came in. We had AA books, but these were books from a very well-known rehab place. And they were good. They were fine. The material, there wasn't anything wrong in them, but they weren't OA. On page 126 of the OA 12 and 12, which didn't come out until 1990, it says, OA-approved literature reflects the experience of many members of the fellowship whose recovery is strongly rooted in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. We know what we have in OA literature because it's been through the literature committee, it's been through a million reviews, and by the time it comes out, we know it contains OA's understanding of our disease and our solution. The book also reminds us to think about the newcomer. I know as a newcomer, I was easily distracted and confused. Many new people are skeptical because they've been through diet programs and diets in books and magazines, and they are looking for gimmicks. They're looking for, you know, hidden agendas. We don't have any hidden agendas. We need to be independent of the places where our meetings are held. We pay rent to the church or the library or the hospital, whatever it is, in ordinary times. We're supposed to pay the going rate, not just donate. You know, some churches are very nice and they'll say, just give what you can, or, you know, half of your collection for the day or whatever. But it was impressed on me that we're supposed to be paying the going rate and be a good tenant. And that way you get treated right as a tenant, and they don't come down to you and ask you to distribute flyers to the church fair, because you know, that's not a thing we do. I've had it happen that the minister will come down and say, can you distribute these flyers to your members? And we say, sorry, with a clear conscience, because we already are meeting our obligation to the church by paying the going rate. I was in a OA group in Southwest Connecticut that had 5 meetings over the course of the week in a YWCA. Most of the meetings in the area paid, you know, a real, real low rent to the church or wherever they were. But they got kicked out for every holiday. You know, if the church couldn't plow the parking lot. That was the way it went. But we were paying real money to this Y. They had ballet classes there that paid a particular rate, and we paid it too. And it was a stretch, but as the group grew and people recovered, we had the money to pay our rent. And we were valuable tenants, and they gave us our own key so that we could hold our meeting on Christmas or we could hold it on Thanksgiving. And they didn't have to subsidize us. There's a story in the tradition about a hospital treatment program that worked with a lot of OA members, and people would mention it by name when they shared in the group. I can see that that's, you know, a problem. We have in Richmond, there's an OA member here who is retired from her career as a eating disorder treatment therapist. And she herself had gone to a treatment center years ago. And over the years, one way and another, she's referred a lot of our members to that treatment center. So a lot of people have experience there, and they're welcome to talk about the experience. It's fine to let people know that there's outside help where it's needed, but the name of the treatment center is not mentioned. If somebody wants to do that, they can ask her, you know, on the side about that. It can be tricky for OA members to talk about other 12-step fellowships when they share at OA meetings. I had to go to a different one to support my extreme people pleasing. All the 12-step, AA is the origin of all 12-step programs, of course, and we use a fair amount of AA literature in our groups. But we're not affiliated with them. And the best practice, as I understand it, is we don't name them when we share at OA meetings. We can say we've been helped by another fellowship without mentioning its name. I used to be the, just another story about another aspect of this tradition. I used to be the contact person for an OA group in Madrid when I lived in Spain. And I would get I got a call from a craniosacral therapist who wanted to come and present to us about how craniosacral therapy would prevent us from overeating. And, you know, you have to be able to be clear and say why. And the tradition is so clear that it makes it easy to say. We don't do presentations from therapists. It's just not a thing for us. No disrespect to the therapy. We just don't have an opinion on it and we don't promote it. They talk about money, property, and prestige in this tradition. If you look at the AA 12 and 12, they had a plan for an AA-sponsored hospital chain that would take people off Skid Row and get them into recovery and give them a job. And, you know, with all the money that they would make from this enterprise, they would do government lobbying and fix capitalism and whatnot. And they actually tried this, and what they found was it didn't work because they say in the book, too many busybody cooks spoil the broth. And the quote, it says, did AA fix drunks or was it an educational project? Was AA spiritual or was it medical? Was it a reform movement? And it concludes that these adventures implanted a deep-rooted conviction that in no circumstances could we endorse any related enterprise, no matter how good. They learned it the hard way and they put it in the traditions because, you know, we don't have to repeat it. In the AA 12 and 12, they also have the long form of the traditions, which is always instructive, talks about AA clubs and hospitals and that they should be separate. And the point is to divide the material from the spiritual. It says outside enterprises shouldn't use the AA name. And it says, while an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. I have a friend in program who has given a workshop on applying the traditions to your personal conduct. And she relates each tradition to a character defect that it can counteract. For tradition 6, she said, meddling. So I asked myself, is meddling one of my character defects? Do I get into other people's situations? How about with sponsees? Do I give out unsolicited advice? Do I have a lot of ideas about what other people in my life should be doing? The tradition tells me to think about my primary purpose. What does my higher power want me to be doing? If I'm not clear on my primary purpose, I need to be asking God all through the day what my next step should be. I have to look for direction all day. Once I've taken step 7, I'm out of the judgment business. I'm not the determiner of what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. I just am trying to be useful to my higher power. It's just like having a boss. I need to ask what my boss wants me to do next. Thanks, got it. And then I do that. And if I do that, then I'm not meddling in anybody's business and I'm sticking to my primary purpose and I'm doing what my higher power wants me to do. And I'll just wrap up with the end of the tradition in OA, in the OA 12 and 12, where it says, first things first is another slogan that sums up tradition six. It's a nice, short, easy slogan that puts the priorities in order. Primary purpose first, everything else after. Thanks.